My next guest landed a coveted interview with the one and only Dr. Maya Angelou. When you find out how she did it, you will understand that some of the biggest moments of your life can happen if you just ask. Coming up next, the fortuitous writer, Marcy Hill. Welcome to the show, Marcy. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Jacqueline?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to have you on today. You've been doing some really good things and just excited to hear about your journey.
Thank you.
Yeah. So one of the first questions I always ask my guests is, how did you view growing older or aging when you were in your 20s?
Honestly, I don't think that was something I really thought about in my 20s. It didn't really hit until after 30-something. Well, I was in my 30s and I was like, oh, you need to do something different. Because I was just out there. Not in a bad way, but professionally.
Yes.
I think that's when reality hit. And then you read all these articles about, well, you live in a home with your mother who is aging. So you get all of these AARP things. And then you see all of these legislative, I mean, all these policies and things that are anti-aging. And then that's when reality hits. So in my 20s, that was nothing I really thought about.
Yeah. So we're kind of carefree in our 20s, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
At least we should be. Now, I don't know about this generation, but in ours, I don't think we had that many issues. And plus, we didn't have social media, so we had each other.
Yeah.
So you typically hung around people your age and you hung out. You didn't stay at home. So you probably, I don't know if you, did we travel a lot? We used to hang out like at the plaza, the mall, and things like that. So we had those options.
Yeah. Evergreen Plaza.
Yeah.
For those who are not from Chicago. Yeah. We just called it the plaza.
Exactly.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So hanging out was just, you know, that was a big part of our youth. So you really didn't have any ideals about aging. No.
Okay. I think my main thing was that in my 20s, my main concern was, oh, I need a job. Because my mama said, you got a year after graduation to figure something out. So, you know, I did that. I was working on learning about working and learning myself. So I never thought about aging.
Okay. So my next question is, what was your biggest epiphany after turning 40? I know a lot of us, you know, we have this, it's a light bulb moment, or there's like a shift. Can you recall having some type of an epiphany after you turned 40?
That I probably, okay, so I had been off of other people's payrolls for 10 years. And at 40 something, I said, okay, you need to get on somebody's payroll so you can start saving for retirement. Because you've done what you needed to do, what you wanted to do for yourself. Mm-hmm. Now it's time for you to get serious about life.
That's so interesting. That was it. That's interesting. Now it's time to get serious about life. That is
retirement, because I was having fun. When I learned, when I figured out Marcy, I was doing Marcy. Some of them weren't always the best decisions. They weren't the dumbest decisions, but they weren't the best decisions. But then after 40 something, like, okay, you need to start saving for retirement. You know, you go to Walmart and you see people, you know, you saw the seasoned people at the door. And sometimes you think they're just out there because they need something to do. No, they need medication.
Mm.
And I was looking at that and I said, well, I don't want to be that person. If I work after, I'm going to even say 55, it's because I choose to, not because I have to.
Sure.
Then, and this is probably digressing a little, but you read so many articles about companies letting seasoned people go, like 50 something. Well, they can't get their retirement money or Social Security until 67 now. And I don't know if it's still 65, if you're a certain, you know, if you're in the past generation, what are you supposed to do in those 10 years?
Yeah.
And a lot of people were employees. And I don't know what companies, all companies did not take care of their employees. You have that 10-year gap. What are you going to do?
Yes, absolutely.
And it's so disheartening to see that, because companies are doing that on purpose. And like I said, I'm probably digressing, but can I just vent for a second?
No, go ahead.
People have done what they were told to do. Some people didn't have, well, the generation before us didn't necessarily have to have an education. That was like a requirement for our generation. But they were told to get a good job and retire nicely. And they, and back then, some companies did take care of their employees, but a lot of them didn't. So what are those? What happened to those people who worked? And most of them, I won't say most, a lot of people did work. They had a different work ethic than our generation.
Yes.
So a lot of them did work. So you did what you're supposed to do, and mm-hmm. then you get to retirement, and then you have to choose between eating and medication. That is so evil. And the system that set it up to be like that, there is just evil. So
wow.
For us, as we see this happening, we know we have to prepare. No, 2008 didn't tell you anything, or if the pandemic did not mm-hmm. tell you anything about preparation, I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you, because those were light bulb moments for us.
Mm, absolutely. For sure. I mean, I'm right here because of that light bulb moment during the pandemic.
So. You know, a lot of people that are quitting their jobs, the great resignation.
Yes, absolutely. So you've done quite a bit, you know, since you decided to kind of change gears. Tell me about your writing journey.
I was working in HR, like once upon a time. I was working in human resources, and it got into a place where I was writing. Okay, I started writing a newsletter for friends and family called Shorty in the House. And it was just, you know, I like sharing great information and useful resources. And I did that for a long time. And then for some reason, the spirit of writing came over me, and I started reading books about how to become a freelance writer. I never thought about it. When I started writing, I said, oh, you can get paid for this. Mm-hmm. And back then, some publications were paying $1 per word. I don't know if they still do it today,
mm-hmm.
but they were paying $1 per word. And then that was something I had started pursuing. You know, I was reading the book, but didn't necessarily pursue it. But then I just couldn't, like, I kept wanting to write more and more.
Mm-hmm.
And I left, the spirit of writing overtook me. I left my job and 12-year career in human resources to pursue a freelance writing career. And it was scary, because who does that? Who leaves a job?
Mm.
And the only plan I had was unemployment. Which was cool, because I had my supervisor at the company. I asked her, I said, well, if I leave here, may I have unemployment? My mama said, the only thing you can do is ask. And she said, yes.
Hmm.
So that Friday around Valentine's Day, I just know it was Valentine's Day weekend, uh-huh. in 2008, I bounced. It was a scary leap. I did a lot, but I did not have a mentor. I would have done more.
Yeah.
But I spent like the first few years, I was learning as I was doing. Uh-huh. Had I had a mentor, I would have had somebody who could have guided me, and I could have just, that learning curve would have been shorter.
Yeah, you would have done more, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And then as a writer, you know, you always have that insecurity, personal insecurity, as well as, well, will they like my work? So that mm-hmm. was a challenge too during that process. So if I had a mentor, yeah, a lot of things would have been different.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as writers, we are very particular about our work. That's, you know, it's like our baby, right?
It is. And so. it's actually us, because it comes from, you know, from whatever we're thinking, that's what's on that paper.
Yes.
So if one person has any negative comment, we take that one comment to heart, even though you had 100 people who say, oh, that was great.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting life, as the writing life.
Yeah, you have to really develop a tough skin. And I always tell my students that, because I remember those days in grad school, you know, during those moments when I would have my writing workshop, and I would be like sitting there just, oh, what are they going to say? What are they going to say? Right. So I definitely remember that. So you quit your job. You took that leap, you know, that leap of faith. And you just bounced, as you said.
I did.
A lot of people have done that, but, you know, it's commendable. So you took that leap of faith and you left your job. You had been in HR for 10 plus years, right?
Yes.
So tell me about the early days as a freelance writer. Did you know what that meant? You know, did you know what that meant, what it entailed, what you're going to do at that point?
Well, in my mind, I was going to be a magazine writer because I was going to get that dollar per word. Get that dollar per word, by the way. But when I started out, I'm like, oh, all I need is 500 words. That would be okay if I could do this for 5 times a month. But it was very hard getting to magazines because you had to pitch editors. Mm. You had to come up with different angles. And you didn't always have to read the magazine, but you should know something about the magazine and the audience. And I think for me, I was like, I had the serious stuff in mind. That was one of my challenges. But throughout my career, now I know that bios and feature stories, you know, if I have to write about an individual, that's me. That's what I do. I didn't know that back then. Had I known that back then, I probably could have gotten that dollar for work. So that, I mean, but it took me years to realize, oh, this is what I love. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, if you need me to write about you, I mean, it's done. But if I have to do, I mean, I can do other things, but that's the main thing.
Right.
Also during that time, I left in 2008, and there was when the industry was transitioning to online, which was also a challenge because print publications didn't really know what to do at that time. So we had some publications paying, the print publications were paying higher than the online publications. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to pitch, what, you know, I was still learning just like everybody else. So I would pitch both. And right after I left my, well, the month after I left my job, I did pitch, submit my application for to Indigo Magazine, which was a prominent Black publication, print publication in Chicago. And I did get an, I was assigned a story, which was the cover story for that next month. So you need those small victories to let you know that you're on the right path, but you still have to do the hard work. And pitching was hard. And I thought, you know, and then
is it ever?
My experience, it's hard to, for me. So I had two things going that hindered me a bit because I was transitioning from human resources to being a writer. When people ask me, oh, are you a writer? Maybe. I think I'm a writer. I've had, you know, I've published some things. So that was one thing. And then just not having those connections in the writing industry. And then I joined a publication, but the members are not, were not so welcoming. So that made, it was, it, that was intimidating.
Yes.
Because you have all these people that you want to walk up to, but because you're unknown, they've been, you know, they're in the industry. I'm a freelancer. I just want to know some people. So if I decide to, or if you need help, I can write it. I'm not a paper writer, but I can write a story. You can adjust it to your paper.
Yeah.
So those are, that was a, those are two things that was not helpful in my early career.
Okay. It's a tough business. It really is. And it, even when you have the gift, and I love how you said that the spirit of writing came over you. That's a good way to look at it because a lot of people don't realize, you know, what it takes to be a writer and to be a creator, right?
Exactly.
You know, fiction writers, we create worlds. You know, I'm a blogger now. So, you know, I just kind of write about whatever, but you know, you have to be inspired. You know, I like that. You know, this certain something has to come over you to kind of push you forward because it can be a tough business. That's for sure.
And it's very hard. First of all, that was a two-step process. When you're pitching a publication, a story idea, you don't want to give the whole idea away. And then if that story is accepted, now you have to write it. So you're doing homework before you actually get the story. So it was, and I read a couple books and I, the pitches were read and rejection letters were good. They were, oh, that was, that's the, another huge challenging part of writing, the rejection.
Yes.
You are going to be rejected.
Absolutely.
Now some people, not even, I mean, like I said earlier, when people, that one person who says something bad, they will just tear at your heartstrings. But then those 100 people who say, hey, that was good. I'm like, oh, okay. And that one person.
Yeah.
But that rejection, though, you have, that's what, something you have to get used to with writing. It doesn't matter which genre. And even with, and I get, actually, rejection, getting those rejection letters were good. It helped you build that thick skin you said you told your students that they need.
Yeah.
It's painful. You're just like, wow, I know it's good. But it probably wasn't a fit for the publication at that time. It didn't fit in what they were trying to do. Mm-hmm. So it's not always you. It's just they didn't need it.
That's a good way to put it. And because I believe that'll inspire somebody who actually needs to hear that. Because I think a lot of writers battle whether or not their work is good enough. And they need to hear that, yeah, you're going to be rejected. Not to take it personal. That's key. Don't take it personal. Don't take it as you're not good enough, especially if people have, or your work has, you know, spoken for itself, right?
Yeah.
So you know you got the chops, okay? And then you're told, we'll have to pass, you know, on you this time around or whatever have you. So I think, you know, those rejection letters, and I got my fair share of them too. I think most writers have. It propels us though to keep going, especially if we know that this is what we were born to do. Yeah. So I like the word passion, because I think it really, you know, when I mention the word passion to people, it's my way of getting them to kind of open up and see, I see you smiling already. Well, talk about your passion for your craft.
You know, I don't know what it was. One thing I can say with writing, it gives you freedom to think about, like, just pour your thoughts on paper. They don't have to make sense. Mm-hmm. What you do by yourself and what you share with the world are two different things. Mm-hmm. And writing actually gave me confidence to do a lot of things, because I read your story about being the only child. I am an only child.
Mm.
And I had to play by myself. I grew up around children, but it was me. I was the background person.
Mm.
Even now with my friends, if we're out, they have, it's not that I don't have personality. They're just more social in public.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm more reserved, even though when it's just us, we're goofy. I mean, I'm goofy. But it helped me to find my voice, because I was always told to sit down and be quiet. And even with certain topics, I'm still not comfortable sharing, like Black women in America. I will talk to you about it. I'm not about to write that, mostly because I don't want other people's opinions. I'm not even afraid of debates. But right now, your opinions, no, I'm not interested. Mm. But that's, I'll talk about it, but I won't write about it. But because I do write, it has allowed me to, and writing does help you think clearly.
Absolutely.
And because they said, I mean, it is thinking on paper.
Yeah, so you can just critical thinking. Yes.
Exactly. So that's another benefit of writing. And I free write every day. And so I've thought of some stuff. I was like, oh, who knew? But it was just something I read on Twitter. And then I started thinking, you know, putting my little thoughts in on my paper.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it helps you think. It's therapeutic, because all of these things with COVID, I wrote them down. I don't want to have a lot of, I'm over COVID conversations. I just am. But it, you know, it helps you formulate thoughts. So if should another conversation come up, I will have a thoughtful opinion.
Yeah.
If people ask. If they don't ask, I'm not. You know, you hear everybody just sharing opinions. Like,
yeah.
I'm okay. Let's talk about something else.
So were you very talkative as a child? You said that you were constantly told.
Yeah, I didn't talk a lot. I did talk a lot in school. Oh. I did not talk a lot at home.
Okay.
I don't know. But I know I talked a lot in school.
Okay.
Oh, I talk a whole lot now. I mean, I think everything that that was bottled up from those years, I couldn't talk, pouring out now. Well, I lived in a house growing up. I lived in a house with generations. I had my great-grandmother, my grandmother, my grandfather. I mean, it was a big house. It wasn't a little cottage.
No, I mean, that's amazing. Go ahead.
And then I had with my mother, two uncles there. So it was like a two flat made into one whole house. So I lived, and I was the youngest person there. So my great-grandmother was from down south. So they had their own, she loved whooping people. So they had their own mentality, you know, the experiences, because she was born in 1905. So she was, 30 years away from slavery, the end of slavery. So that whole mindset was there. Then my grandmother was of the greatest generation. She was a hustler. I think back, my grandmother always had money. She was always selling something. And then there's my mama, who's a boomer. Mm-hmm. And then I'm Gen X. Mm. But being the only one there, I was told to, you know, stay in the child's place. And then I loved books. So books, that's my reprieve. So I had to learn how to, even as a writer, mm-hmm. I had to learn how to come from behind these books and mm-hmm. be able to share this book, you know, book report. And that was hard. And even as a blogger, it was hard. Mm-hmm. And then people say, well, you know, you're a blogger now, you have to be seen. Do I? Can mm-hmm. I just stay back here behind the computer? So, I mean, that did help build confidence.
Yes.
Skills, but yeah, writing, it was very beneficial.
When you mentioned that you read a lot, I think that's the story for most of us writers. You know, we got lost in books. And, you know, I still teach first year writing students and I tell them that I've never met an avid reader who's also not a good writer. And I always repeat it. I've never met an avid reader who's also not a good writer. The two go hand in hand because when you're reading, you're training your brain, you know, to know how words should be arranged on the page, you know, the flow of words and punctuation and all of that kind of stuff. You're training your brain. So, you know, we didn't know it at the time when we were younger, especially, but absolutely we were training for this day.
Well, I guess talking a lot helped me too.
Yes. And see, I was always the opposite. I was always quiet and I've always expressed myself better on paper. Still do. You know, I'll talk, you know, to people I know, of course, you know, and strangers will strike up a conversation with me too. But I express myself much better with the pen.
Right. Always have. That's what we do.
So I always, you know, when I think about you, Marcy, I always think about something that you had a chance to do that the rest of us as writers or even journalists, right, wish they have had the chance to do. You landed an interview with someone who was just amazing. So talk about that. You interviewed the late, great Dr. Maya Angelou. So
that was the best experience in my life ever. And it's better than high school graduation, college graduation. And I don't think those are like the two biggest highlights in my life that I can remember.
Yes.
But one weekend, it was a Saturday, mm-hmm. I was here. Having a pity party because I'm pitching, nothing is happening. And I don't know what made Dr. Maya Angelou come to mind because it's Maya Angelou or Maya Angelou.
It's spelled Lou.
Right.
Maya Angelou. So I say Angelou, you know, we okay. writers, we like words. So, okay. And the sound of words.
Dr. Angelou.
Sometimes I pronounce words incorrectly because I just like the way they sound. You know,
me too. And we get tired of speaking correctly and writing correctly. You know, everything in writing has to be right. So I'll just say something wrong just because.
Yes, I love doing that. And my daughters always go, Mom, you're an English professor. Okay. Why are you pronouncing that word like that? Because I just like the way it sounds.
Right. And sometimes you want to speak phonetically, even though we know it's wrong.
Yes.
Like I Mingo love Reed. It.
Finally, somebody who understands. Yeah. Okay.
So I was just like having my moment and I said, well, let me see if I can have this interview. I went to her website and just said, we did an interview request because when you reach out to people and companies, they all have a communications page. It might be called publications. Look for the communications person. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I went to the site and I said, she was my shero. I would love to have an opportunity to talk to her. Mm-hmm. And within a week, her publicist responded and said, oh, well, you know, what would you like to talk about? I didn't have any topics. I said, well, I would just love to talk to her. And within the next week, the interview was scheduled. Said she gave me the one thing I couldn't talk about, which wasn't on my list anyway. Mm-hmm. And it was the most blessed experience. And even at the time, I think she was probably 80 at that time.
What year was this?
In 2012. Okay. She was so full of wisdom. And all I want to, I just wished that the conversation took place over the phone, but I just wished I could have been at her feet, the feet of my elder, just to hear the wisdom. Because I read her books.
Yes.
But I know it would have been different in person. Because I know there's some stuff missing in those books. We would have just flipped through them before the end and be like, okay, so what really happened here? Can we get some more details? But yeah, that was it was a blessing. And what made mine different was, like you said, there I was talking to some journalists and they said, well, I told them I had an interview with Dr. Maya Angelou, and they was like, oh, me too, but I'm not on anybody's publication's payroll. It's just a random email sent and the opportunity took place. And the interview was published in St. Louis Magazine on her birthday in 2012. And she was born in St. Louis. So it was on her hometown, in her hometown on her birthday. So that was like extra amazing.
Yes, that's amazing. And the interview actually can, it can be found on your website. Yeah, check it out.
And it's still on St. Louis, St. Louis Mag, well, St. STLMag.com. It's still there.
Wow.
That Every is... now and then I go and check too.
Right. Is it still there? Is it still there?
Right.
To me, that is just like a dream, like the dream of a lifetime, you know, for so many people to just say that they had the opportunity to do that. I mean, I think after we all read the book, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, we somehow felt connected to her, you know, especially the part about her not talking, you know, for a couple of years, you know. And then something that I remember from that book that always, you know, sticks out in my mind is the woman who was doing her hair. I can't remember if it was a grandmother or it was an elder who told her, oh, baby, you're going to talk again and the world is going to hear your words. And she just sat there and she listened. She still wasn't talking, but that always sticks out in my mind because that was prophetic.
I forgot the book, but I've read so much.
Yeah. Oh, I know. But that was, but that part, you know, of course, I'll never forget that part because that to me kind of shaped her life. You know, I think most people were like, if I landed an interview like that, I'm good. Right.
Right. And you would be, and even if you could have a conversation with someone you admire, it might be easier today with social media, just talking to somebody with that level of respect
and to hear her voice.
Yes.
Oh,
I mean, you just hear you. I've read the wisdom, but to hear it, and she was talking to me.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, I was in awe. I had to make one of my biggest goals for the interview was not to stutter. I did it once. I'm like, girl, get it together. This is not okay.
Right. This woman, you know, is a powerhouse when it comes to words.
Exactly. And to me, it's sounding like you just stepped out of kindergarten. That is not okay.
You did better than probably most of us because we would have just been, you know, so nervous that we couldn't get anything out. Oh, man. So you did freelance work and then just on a whim, you reached out to Dr. Maya Angelou's camp, and they granted you access. You know,
well, sometimes it's a matter. A lot of times, it's just a matter of asking. You still might get rejected, but asking is the one key that opens the door to a whole bunch of opportunities.
Absolutely.
We're afraid to do it, and I would encourage anybody if there's something that you want, just ask.
Just ask. That's powerful. You're helping somebody right now, I'm telling you.
Another story, though. My interview with Angie Stone, I got that in a kind of dishonest way.
Do tell.
Because I had that story with Indigo. Because they had, we have an event here. Well, it was they were here for the Taste of Chicago. And, you know, they have a lot of performers during the event. Because I had that credit with Indigo behind me, I said, well, I'm writing for Indigo. it wasn't a total lie. It just wasn't a total truth. I had an article to say, I wrote this. I only had that one. And they granted the interview. And it wasn't published. But I wrote a whole article, and I had my blog at that time. And I posted it because Angie Stone, you know, the girl is amazing. And her knowledge is, I mean, she has she's a different generation, but the girl is, she's bad. And I had wrote the story. I said, well, this wasn't published, but this is what she said. And then I had a picture from Worsham Robinson, who is like this really hot photographer. He's an independent. He does a lot of work for publications, Chicago publications. And I had the photo and the article. It wasn't published. They didn't sue me for using their name, thank God. And that was another thing I just asked. And it wasn't totally dishonest, but be careful how you use different sources. But if there's something that you need to do, get permission to use other people's names. Most people will give it to you if you are credible. But you yourself, you have to have that record. You have to have integrity.
Yes.
Because I wouldn't have used Indigo in a bad way. I just wanted this interview.
Yes.
So that's something to consider too. If you don't know a person personally who can get you in, look at all of the resources you have available to you. Because I promise you that six degrees of separation. There's somebody within 6 degrees of you who can get you what you need, or at least help you get close to what you want.
I believe that. Yeah.
And I think social media makes it smaller. Because it was 6 degrees. You go online, you're just like, how do you know this person? Before I answer that question, how do you know this person?
Right.
Because I don't want you coming after me. Because my cousin, I'm digressing just a little. My cousin said, well, if this person asks you how you know me, don't respond. What? What are you putting me in?
Right. What are you into?
Exactly. So that those connections are smaller, but just ask, since you do have those connections.
Yeah, I think that's important for people to know. Nowadays, I think that people they're not as likely to ask, because especially if they think that, you know, certain people are untouchable, right? That they can't get close to this person or that person. But yeah, I like that. Just ask. The worst they can do is say no, right?
Right.
Or not respond.
But even if they're not responding, just try again, because people are so bombarded with messages from everywhere. One time it was just email messages, and the only concern you had was the email going to the spam box. Now they got all these social media messages, and then they all of these reminders to let you know that so-and-so somebody's viewing your profile. You know, this update has this many views. They're bombarded. Just keep trying.
That's
but then one thing I will say, in LinkedIn, just from LinkedIn, they'll tell you to personalize the message. So instead of saying, hey, can we have an interview? You say, well, you know, I read your story. If you can do research on a person, you don't have to do a whole background check. But if you can do a little research, I read your story. I saw this post. It might get you closer, or an actual response. Sometimes the main response, maybe not. But you have no excuse nowadays to say, not to mention what this person has done. Because most people are vain. They post everything. But in the best case scenario, go to LinkedIn. And other scenarios, because I'm not going to say that they're bad, wherever you see this person hanging out at, leave a compliment. And that's another way. If they see you interacting with their posts, now you're on their radar. That's something to consider as you go along your different ventures, whether it's online or even retail, whatever you want to do.
Go ahead and drop those gems. I'm not mad at you.
I have to do all of that. That's why I'm not on social media that much now. I was like, okay, I'll be back one day.
But those are some genuine gems, really. Really. It's just...
And you just, I'm sorry, and you see people, and somebody might have 100 responses, right? And you don't have to go to every post, but do it often. If it's somebody you think you want to connect with. Mm-hmm. And when you connect with them, you're not asking for anything mm-hmm. other than advice. Because mm-hmm. people give you advice all day long.
Yeah.
Or give them a compliment. Mm-hmm. But don't let your interaction be, hey, can you do this for me?
Yes. I heard somebody, Lovey Ajayi, said that. She's like, people, of course, you know, reach out to influencers and celebrities all the time. And one of her models is, she's like, don't let your first interaction be an ask. Right. It's like, if you've never interacted with me before, we've never spoken, don't let it be an ask, you know,
right.
Don't hit me up and say, hey, can you do this and so. Yeah, it seems a little impersonal because they probably get that all the time, right?
All the time.
They get it all the time.
Because even when I was blogging, oh, can I post this on your site? I don't know if you can write. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, So, I mean, and this is just in relationships in general, because this is a pet peeve of mine. Mm-hmm. Can I vent for 2 minutes or less? Don't call me from a long hiatus of not speaking, mm-hmm. asking for something.
Mm.
So I personally, and I told a young lady this, and she didn't ask me, she asked me for a reference or something. Mm-hmm. I have no problem with that. Mm-hmm. But don't call me after 2 years of silence. Can you be a reference? I have a problem with that. And I told her, I said, look, you want to get further along and more references?
Mm-hmm.
Just send somebody an email now and then and say, hey, I'm thinking of you. How are you doing? That's
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
They might respond. Most people will respond mm-hmm. or they may not. But you just want to stay on their radar. So mm-hmm. send a message and say, you know, just ask how you doing. Because you see people online, that a lot of times that's not their true. Those are not their true feelings all the time.
Right.
And then I still call people. Yes. People don't do that anymore. But
it's a lost art.
I need to hear you're okay. Because, you know, I have a friend that who moved, my college friend. We text, but once a month, I need to hear that you're okay. Because everybody's can say, I'm okay. And generally speaking, they are okay. But what part of you is not okay? Mm-hmm. Overall, you might be okay, but you might have that thing that's happening.
Yeah,
you know, that's nipping at that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to hear.
Yeah, you need to hear say. Yeah.
Yeah. But the point is, don't call people when you want something. Send those little messages. Hey, what's up? You can send a gift and say good morning. But that way you're on their radar. And when you need something,
mm-hmm.
that increases your chances of getting it. If you have integrity.
Yeah, sometimes I get students who reach out to me after, yeah, I was in your class, you know, 3 years ago.
Who are you? I remember the name, but who are you?
I'm like, what? I'm like, do you have any idea how many students I've had since then?
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, it happens all the time to educators, you know, but that's par for the course, I guess. So let me ask you this, you know, and this is, you know, the show is the 40 Plus Files, and I'm all about empowering women. You know, women are doing their thing, you know, over 40.
Oh, they are.
What do you think are some of the biggest advantages of doing what you do at your age?
One thing is having challenges.
Wisdom. Mm-hmm.
Right. Because over the years, you do dumb stuff. You make mm-hmm. bad decisions.
Yes.
Even though at the time you thought they were good decisions, and in hindsight, you said, that was so bad. It's just bad. So that's one advantage of doing. Okay. So what I do is, I don't know what I do. Let me just put it like that.
I'm a writer.
I'm a writer. But at this point in my life, I am transitioning. I don't know to what right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I go through this process at least every 2 years, whereas what's next? And at this age, the wisdom allows me to step back and stop and be still, because earlier I would have just continued to do stuff to try to figure out what works. I'm like, Lord, I don't know. So let me just go ahead and journal.
Yes.
Let me do my free write. Let me work on this book I'm supposed to be finishing that. In limbo.
Mm-hmm.
but it, the wisdom allow me to stop and recollect. Another good thing about being this age, I don't listen to everybody. When I first started, I listened to everybody. Nobody was a writer, but they were business people. So I thought they were wise, and they were wise in business, but you could not help me along my writing journey. Another good thing at 40, something, you don't care. You care, but you don't care. When you were younger, you cared about people's opinions about everything.
Everything.
How do I look?
Yes.
Even from here down to your feet, you cared about people's opinions. It seems like, I can't even say 40-something, nobody cares. All these people walking out here with these pajamas on, nobody cares. But for those of us in the professional arena, we should care. But I think the internet created opportunities for people where you do care. Mm-hmm. You should still care, but be mindful of whose opinion, who's giving the opinion. Because even in my writing, one person who would point something out was not always the most, they didn't know about writing. They just saw a misspelled word, which hurt my feelings, right? Mm-hmm. But then you have all of these other writers. Oh, this is good. You know, you can do this to spaz it, to make it better.
Yeah.
You had one negative person. So even then, look at the people who are giving their opinions. You know, how much do you respect what they say? So that was a plus. Those are the lessons learned. But the challenge is now, I got to work a job because I need to save for that retirement. I'm good at saving on my own, but to say, hey, I'm about to put $100 for so I think that's the biggest challenge for me right now. My time is not my own. But I am working on an exit plan.
Okay.
I say by the time I turn 55, but if it's God's will.
Before then.
I'm going to take that leap.
Yeah, my motto is be unapologetically bold about your bounce. Make that a hashtag.
Oh man, I am so. And then somebody asked me if I would. My friend asked me one day recently. She said, "So, do you still want to be an entrepreneur?" I said, "Girl, I love my time." Mm-hmm. But now, one thing I will say that when I had my time, it came to a point I was wasting it. So a job is not the worst thing that can happen. It's teaching me how to manage the little time that I have. And the less time you have, you get more done. Well, I don't know about other people, but for me, except this book that's in limbo.
The less time you have, you get more done. Writers tend to work well under pressure,
Right. So, that's one of those things. But if you have to work a full-time job, you do what you need to do. Because that was one of the things I should have done in my early stages when I left my job. Mm-hmm. I should have had a part-time job, and I didn't. I was like, I'm going to make this writing thing work. After 6 months when I saw I wasn't making that writing thing work. But then it was also 2008. Jobs were a challenge back then, too.
Yes.
And another thing I didn't do, I should have done, was I should have saved more when I knew I wanted to make this move.
Okay.
And I didn't.
So you're helping. So word to the wise. Word to the wise.
I have no regrets.
Yeah. So have a little bit of cushion, right?
Yeah.
And you don't necessarily have to, see the whole staircase, but just have a little bit of cushion and take that first step.
Right. Yeah, and if you never take that first step, you will not know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking today, I annoy me because I'm not sure if other people get annoyed by this. Mm-hmm. This is just an example. I have, I said I wanted to buy a zipper, right? Mm-hmm. A month ago. Mm-hmm. It's cold now. Well, it's for a zipper for a coat. It's cold now. Mm-hmm. Why am I waiting until it's cold to buy this zipper? But I finally bought the zipper. What about all of those projects? I have a whole listing of creative projects, ideas, they're just sitting here. Why haven't I done anything?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think for me, one of the issues is creativity is subjective. Mm-hmm. Like if you look at comedians, everything is not funny to everybody. And the yes. same, everybody will not accept your creativity. And I think at that moment, I was like, oh, this is so funny. That could have been that Frappuccino talking. And it could have been me.
Well, hey, Dave Chappelle is going through that right now. Right?
Saw that. And I was listening. I did see that. And I said, he is offending these people. Because if you're in this, that community, mm-hmm. and some of the stuff, I said, this is just wrong. Because people are, and it's not even being politically correct. Mm-hmm. Some of the stuff I watched it, and I said,
okay. You're right.
But then it's subjective because he has a lot of support, and he had those other people who are just angry.
Absolutely.
So that's a lesson too. Try not, even though your work may not be everybody's flavor, try not to piss people off. Just be mindful of the presentation. Everybody won't like it because you can say something mm-hmm. and they'll take it. The individual will take it anyway. Like I felt that he was offending some people. Mm-hmm. I'm not in that community. Mm-hmm. So I was just wondering how other people were accepting it. Mm-hmm. But even words are subjective. You could say, good morning. Oh, mm-hmm. what's so good about it? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's how your day is starting.
Right.
So right. You just got to be, anything that you do, anything that you say, just be mindful.
Be mindful.
Be prepared mm-hmm. just to either defend yourself or to be silent. And that's another thing we have to practice. Because mm-hmm. people always come at us as writers and you want to snap back, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow. That's when wisdom kicks in.
Yeah. You know, I feel, I don't know, some kind of way about asking this because you look 12. Y'all should, you know, y'all wouldn't believe her age. She looks 12.
I'm 100 years old. Me and ARV.
No, there looks like a teenager. But what advice do you have for women who are close to turning 40 or over 40 who think that the best years of their lives are behind them?
They are not. Actually, they're just getting started because mm-hmm. at 40, that's when you stop caring about other people's opinions. And hopefully through your 20s and 30s, you have learned yourself. And once you get to know yourself, you love yourself more. Mm-hmm. And at 40, if you are a certain size and you want to wear that mini skirt, mm-hmm. just wear it classy. People going to talk about you, whether it's classy or trashy, mm-hmm. do you. Mm-hmm. And your best days are ahead because now because you know more about yourself, you can say, no, I don't. And you can say what you don't want, which makes it easier to know what you do want.
Yes.
So, and then once you're 40, you mm-hmm. can, I don't know if you date, you know, on a dating scene, you can go your age.
Right, yeah. Talk about it all on this podcast.
Because Stella got her groove back at 40 something, right?
Right.
Or you can go older, get your sugar daddy, but that might not last. You just see life differently. Hopefully you have the income to go with it because we thought, a lot of us in our 40s thought we would have more money, mm-hmm. but the pandemic hit, 2008 hit. So the gains that we had during those times, some of us lost it. So now then we're rebuilding. Another thing I would say in your 40s, hopefully you have a good level of self-esteem. Mm-hmm. And then that with self-esteem, you have courage, right?
Yes.
So you now that's when you have that courage to ask. Do not be afraid to ask for what you want and definitely for anything that you need. Mm. Put your pride to the side because there was a period where I needed stuff. I didn't want to ask. I was 30 something when mm-hmm. I was doing my writing. I didn't want to ask my mama. Mm-hmm. I'm supposed to be working. Mm-hmm. But thankfully, I had that support. I owe her a lot of money now, but that was just something I had to do. But I treat my mama like a bill. She's after my tithes, I pay my mama.
Mama understands. She understands.
So you do what you need to do for you and forget the opinions of others. Mm-hmm. And if it looks crazy to other people, good. Keep doing it.
Oh.
That means you're doing something right. If they not talking about you, you ain't doing something right.
Ooh, I love it. Those are definitely words to live by.
And when people ask you why, ask them why not.
I love it.
Why are you doing this? Okay, why aren't you doing what you said you were going to do?
Yes. Oh, so, I love it.
So you get an attitude at 42. Like, you don't ask me nothing if you ain't doing what you said you're going to do.
Yes, I love it. Oh my goodness. It's been so wonderful talking to you again, Marcy. How can people find you or get in touch with you on social media or whatever? What are your social media?
I am currently incognito. Ooh. No, I'm kidding. No, I am. You can find me at Marcy Writes. You can email me at Miss Marcy, MSMARCIE, at MarcyWrites.com. Okay. And I will respond. And you can also catch me on Twitter.
Okay.
You see, that's how lame I am. Everybody else say you can catch me on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok.
Twitter. All of that information will definitely be in the show notes. Thank you so much, Marcy, for sharing
your 40 plus thank you for having me, Jacqueline.
Power with us today.
Thank you for listening to and supporting the 40 Plus Files. I hope today's episode challenges you to take that leap of faith. To learn more about Marcy, visit her website at marcywrites.com.